It's called Egregorus, the occult entities that watch over human destiny. We're going to continue with our occult theme tonight on Coast to Coast. Mark Stavish joins me next. We'll be right back. Well, it's been about 2 years, but Mark Stavish is back with us. Mark is a very respected authority in the study and practice of Western spiritual traditions. His more than 35 years of experience as an author of many books, including The Path of Alchemy, Kabbalah for Health and Wellness, and Between the Gates, Lucid Dreaming, Astral Projection, and the Body of Light. He has also written a book on poltergeists, and his latest is Egregorus, the Occult Entities that Watch Over Human Destiny. And I had the honor of being able to write a little blurb on the back of his book about his work. Mark, welcome back.
Well, thank you very much. It's great to be back. And, you know, it is almost 9 years to the date when I was first on this show with you.
That's right. My gosh. Where does the time fly, huh?
Out the window, it appears.
So this new book, now tell me about this very strange title, and tell me about the book itself.
Well, it's just one of those things that just happened. I was having lunch in Binghamton, New York, at the Lost Dog Cafe with Jocelyn Godwin, someone I'm sure most of your listeners are familiar with his writings. And I just said, you know, I'm thinking of writing a book on egregores. And he said, oh, thank God, because if you don't do it, I'm going to have to. And that's how it started. And I had already done a fair amount of research on it. So it was really very easy to put together. And unlike other books that I've written, this one has a nice, I mean, all my books are easy to read, but this one came together more organically. It was very much like just having a conversation with someone about the topic, you know, rather than saying, well, this is what you need to know, and, you know, textbook format or something like this. It just wrote itself, and I don't say that lightly because, you know, a lot of authors say that, but that happened, and it just, when it was done, I said, well, this is really nice. It's a good, solid book on the topic, and apparently the only one out there.
We've got the name of the book, of course, linked up at coasttocoastam.com, but I'm going to spell it for people, Mark. Egregores, Egregores.
Yeah.
Well, what is that?
Well, it's a collective entity that has two possible meanings. One is what we would think of in modern terms as a kind of like the Jungian unconscious. You know, whenever you get a group of people together, they tend to have certain things in common that often affect them unconsciously. And then, for our listeners who are interested in the occult, a more classical understanding. And this is where you have a psychic entity that is intentionally created, which has a spiritual intelligence at one end, and us as human beings or participants in the egregore, the cult, at the other end. And this was well known in classical times, where we hear about the Roman priests actively engaging in spiritual combat against the enemies of Rome before actual warfare would begin. So there's those two meanings, and they're not necessarily exclusive.
Are they evil entities? What are they?
They're just, as I said, they're a collective force that happens. You know, to look at any group you're in, you'll notice there's certain common denominators of people that are in that group.
Right.
And so any egregore becomes, and this is where we can tie it into Jacques Vallée and UFOs later on, they're really a social control mechanism, okay? They limit the activities of the individuals in that group along particular lines so that the organization keeps moving. Yeah, well, that's fine, because look, if you want to be an engineer, you go to school to study engineering. You know, there's only so many art classes you can take and still graduate in 4 years with a degree in engineering. For anything that happened, you know, any area of study that you have, there has to be focus. So they are a way of focusing our involvement and participation, but they also formulate a worldview, because egregores tend to be most common among political and religious organizations. I mean, they're anywhere and everywhere, but those are the two where we see it most strongly, predominantly. So they tend to color your worldview and your sense of self and your perception in the world.
Now, what is, Mark, a tulpa?
A tulpa is a term that we hear about first in the writings of Alexandra David Neal from her book Magic and Mystery in Tibet. And it means a kind of magical thought form, a conscious projection of energy in creation. So anything in a way can be a tulpa in that regard. But when she wrote about it, she was talking about actually visualizing something. In this case, it was a monk, a jolly monk, to such strong and powerful degree that it became visible to those around her, and then even began to take on its own kind of sentience, or possible, if we would say, artificial intelligence, and desire to be independent of her.
Do these egregores, do they have a certain appearance?
Well, the story goes that on the psychic realm, each will have a very distinct and unique appearance, and you can get a sense of it based upon, in this case, national symbols. During the late 19th and early 20th century, the term egregores was fairly common among French occult circles. And in one book by Paul Sadir, Initiations, which is a great English translation by Gareth Knight, he talks about the appearance of egregores on the psychic level. And he says, of course, you know, you have the Russian bear, you have the French cock, you have the American eagle, and that these animal symbols and symbols would be perceived on some level on the astral.
Right. Are they... I'm trying to picture these things, because they are occult entities. Do they do they function? Do they what do they do to people?
Well, they're living entities. That's just it. And anyone who is a part of it is a part of it, just as you would be part of any organization.
So you could see one as it goes by you, or something like that.
If you were psychic, you could perceive it, and if you had a good sense of clairvoyance, you could perceive aspects of it, just like you could perceive the amount of energy being generated at a football game or at a concert.
But if you were not, you probably would not then witness them?
You would not see it, but you would still be exposed to the energy that it creates, just as you're exposed to the heat of a fire, even if you don't perceive the flames.
What summons them to come to the scene?
A particular style of energy or frequency. So this is where we get into different groups have different egregores. So if you would say the emotional energy generated by the group. So you would say there would be a collective force in any club we're in. And when I say club, I use that term very loosely, okay? Because you could say there's a strip club, right, where people go together for highly sexualized entertainment. Well, that's a lot of energy, okay? So there's going to be psychic entities or parasites that are attracted to that club. And on the other hand, you got this great cooking club down the street where they're making fantastic dinners, and a lot of happy energy is going on there because, you know, cooking's always fun. There's a lot of emotion involved. There's going to be a whole different set of psychic energies that are attracted to that. And we go across the spectrum there. So it's the emotional energy that is the food and the fuel of the psychic entity or the egregore.
Are the experiences with the egregores positive or negative, or both?
Both. It's both. It's really a matter of, you know, your mother was right, you know, pick your friends wisely. You know, we see in a lot of activities, particularly say in Buddhism, they talk about the three jewels, and there's the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, and the Sangha is a community of practitioners. You know, and you're supposed to stay within that and really not associate with anyone outside of it. And the reason is being to stay focused on what is the function of Buddhism. And we see that in many organizations. And we see that where research has shown that you become like the five people you spend the most of your time with. So pick your friends wisely, because you take on their characteristics even unconsciously, even without trying. And that's how these collective entities work. I'm sure we've all seen it. We've all had a friend, someone who went off and joined some group, whatever. Doesn't matter what kind it was. Could have been a church, could have been an environmental group, could have been a gym, you know? And, you know, their personality changes for better sometimes and sometimes not.
Sometimes not, exactly. Mm-hmm. You have mentioned a couple reports of negative experiences with these egregores in the book. Give us an example or two.
Well, when you first hear about egregores, it can be a very terrifying experience, because you realize that you are surrounded and constantly being influenced by a variety of different forces unseen. And these are, you know, activities and ideas from various groups that you're involved in, and even associations. So people can often get very terrified of it. So I want to say that we don't have to be, and that the examples that I picked in the book are worst-case scenarios so that people can have an understanding of how these things can ultimately end up if you're not careful.
Well, but scenarios nonetheless, right?
Yes, very much so. And the three groups that we have, one is from a fellow who's involved with the Tibetan Buddhist group, which I'm very familiar with that one. His story is a little less sensational, but it was a very soft difficulty in pulling away from the group. The others were with two occult organizations, both of which I was familiar with the people who involved in the groups. And the in the one, it was terrible because everyone came down with terrible illnesses and diseases, particularly blood diseases, strange things were difficult to diagnose. And their emphasis in that group was constantly on the egregore, contacting it, building it, being a part of it. And, you know, when you involve yourself that much in these kind of invisible energies, you see this kind of phenomena where people who do a lot of parapsychic research, people who go in search of UFO contacts, and this was well documented by Jacques Vallée, and a lot of folks involved in exorcism who don't have a good means of, we'll call, psychic hygiene or purity, seem to come down with some very strange diseases that all have a lot of commonality to them. And that's what was explored in the book, how every one of the leaders in this group came down with just very, very bad diseases, and then mental health issues among some of the membership.
Mark, when you've been doing this, and you've been doing this for some time, this latest work, was there anything that particularly bothered you when you were putting it together?
Yes, on two levels. One is to see how widespread these egregores are, but also, and I say this with great reservation because I don't want it to be misunderstood, but it was one of the few times when I can say there was a great deal of psychic interference with the book and some other work that I was doing that was related.
Like to try to topple your work?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I talked about it with friends and associates, people who are familiar with it, particularly some of those in the paranormal community that I'm close to. I would say how this is very interesting, how this is occurring around this book. So we began a joke. The joke was we had poked the demiurge in the eye, and it didn't like it. Because, remember, this book is ultimately about people recognizing their involvement in a variety of groups and activities, metaphysical, religious, political, and how to decide if that involvement is actually good for them or not good for them. So it's really about personal freedom. And a lot of these entities, they don't want that because our involvement, our emotional commitment is their food.
They feed off that, don't they?
Exactly. Yeah. Just as poltergeists, because there's a very strong similarity, just as poltergeists or we see areas of demonic infestation, as we talked about in the last time I was on, they feed off the fear and energy of the environment where they're taking place.
Who assigns them to basically, I'm not going to say harass us, but, I mean, what drives them to us?
Well, it's our desires. So if you have a really powerful desire to be a fantastic artist and speaker, you will most likely draw the attention of those spiritual entities, which are going to be very good for you to develop your artistic abilities. And, of course, the Greeks would call those the muse, you know, the inspirational forces. If you have a desire to be a very good surgeon, you're going to attract those energies that have to do with medicine. The same thing is if you're driven by power. So it's really, or the need to be famous, or the desire for a great deal of wealth, or ownership of something. Those unique characteristics of us will attract a particular type of energy, or entity, if you will. And again, we can do this consciously, where we seek it out, and then join a group that's involved in that. I want to be a good person, so I join a church. I want to be religious. I want to learn how to meditate, so I go to my New Age center. Okay? Or I want to be rich and powerful, and I join a gang. Okay? Now, and then behind that group is going to be spiritual forces.
But some of these forces are pretty negative, aren't they?
Some of them are, very much so. And that's where we don't understand it as living beings. They have a life cycle. It may be larger than we can grasp because it may be hundreds of years, thousands of years, or what have you, or tens of thousands of years, but they have life cycles too. So our relationship to it can be either very healthy and good for us or not. And remember, too much of a good thing isn't healthy either. That's where I talk about how you see how in many religious and political groups, our altruism, our desire to be good, our desire to be helpful, our desire to make the world a better place is often used against us.
Are these egregores created by us, or are they out there?
It's a little bit of both. There is the human desire, which says, you know, I want to understand the universe I'm in. So we go into parapsychological research or metaphysical research. And then it's, you know what, I don't just want to understand this. I want to, what's a practical application? How can I use it? And how can I get some information about it? Now, remember, up until recently, we didn't have Google to tell us everything. and that was John Dee's problem. You know, he wanted to know everything. And
right.
His desire was that the angels could tell him things. But what he didn't understand is that, you know, the angels lie. they're not always the most honest beings, because you don't know what you're dealing with. You really don't know who or what it is you're talking to. So, you know, that's why they tell us in various scriptures to learn how to test the spirits.
You know, could these egregores be angels?
They could be a variety of things. Angel, because remember, it's like think of it as a corporation. You know, there's the receptionist, there's the doorkeeper, there's the CEO, there's the janitor, there's the technicians all along the line. There can be a variety of entities involved in this. And, of course, us as human beings. So we don't really know what we're involved with often. That's why the purity of attitude is stressed so much in religious and metaphysical teachings. That's the one thing that can help keep you safe, is a strong, healthy, generous, truly compassionate, not a silly compassion or an idiot compassion, but a truly open and courageous heart. And why the vices that we often hear talked about aren't just you know, silly things that we shouldn't do, but that, you know, our greed, our avarice, our laziness, all of these things are there, and if we're not careful, they can be used against us.
What creates the positive and negative with these?
Well, that's just a hard one to say, because we'd have to look at each one individually, but we would say for someone who's involved in a group, the positive thing is going to be, is this helping me be a better person? Is this helping me to achieve my goals as an individual? And that's the key part. Is this helping me to achieve my goals as an individual? And is this helping me be more relaxed and more confident and peaceful?
Mark, when we come back, let's talk about your past book as well, Studies in Poltergeist, Obsession and Possession. And then in our last hour, of course, we'll take phone calls with you on Coast to Coast. Mark's website is HermeticInstitute.org, which is linked up at coasttocoastam.com for you. And again, always you can email me and fire away at george@coasttocoastam.com. Mark Stavish, our special guest, and we'll be back with him in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Mark Stavish with us, his book, Egregores, the Occult Entities That Watch Over Human Destiny. Where do we get this book, Mark?
You can get it on Amazon, or you can get it directly from the publisher, Inner Traditions.
Super. You enjoy writing these, don't you?
I love it.
Yeah, I can tell. I mean, I can tell. When we talked a couple of years ago about studies in poltergeist, obsession, and possession, I got so many emails about that night. We also scared the living daylights out of people.
That was a great show.
With that one. So let's talk a little bit about that. Then we'll take full calls next hour with you.
Sure.
About all this. In your opinion, when we talked about studies and poltergeist obsession and possession, let's talk about that. What causes the possessions of people? What happens to them?
Well, usually something stupid, and it's unintentional. People like to talk about belief in the afterlife or angels and demons or other kinds of spiritual entities, but they don't really believe in it. And all this ties into the egregores as well, by the way. And they'll do some kind of, silly experimentation with something, or they'll just, again, fall into the wrong crowd, lifestyles and behaviors that leave them open to obsession and ultimate possession. And by the time that happens, they're in trouble. So it's just the way it is. People talk about a belief in entities in the other world, but they tend to have a naive notion. We say as above, so below. Well, that means that just because they're dead doesn't mean they're smart, or just because they're invisible doesn't mean they're nice. I mean, there's neighborhoods you wouldn't go into in this place and where you live, and there's neighborhoods in the psychic domain that you wouldn't go into either.
At least not willingly.
At least not willingly, or without the proper escort and protection, as it were.
Is it conceivable that people who dabble with Ouija boards and things like that are creating a bigger problem than they even knew what they got into?
Oh, yeah, definitely. No question about it. And it's not just there. I see it often with a lot of holistic health centers, too. You have a lot of people who go to these places who are very ill, and they're seeking to be healed. They're seeking wellness. But their emotional pain is so tremendous that they become magnets for these parasitical entities. And if the cleansing isn't properly done, the people involved with it become open to obsession and possession. So that's why I believe in that book, possibly, maybe it was one of the others we wrote, we talked a lot about the importance of, bad term, psychic hygiene, purification, keeping your psychic channels healthy and clear so that you don't become a feeding ground for these forces.
I was going to say, how much of this is created by the individual who just doesn't take care of themselves spiritually?
We would say all of it.
Yeah.
Directly or indirectly, all of it. Yeah.
I mean, because you always wonder, why is that person think they're possessed, but this other person isn't? What creates that difference? Is it the individual who can fight it off?
I mean, we didn't even say fight it off. That's part of it. But, when you have someone who has a powerful negative emotional state, and they're open to these kind of forces, negative demonic or parasitical forces, and if they're involved in alcohol abuse, substance abuse, emotional abuses of all kinds, there's just, again, it's opportunity, host of opportunity is what it is, low-hanging fruit. Whereas someone like who is meditating, has a good spiritual life, is
happy.
Optimistic, happy, positive, okay, those are the people who are often, we don't see them bothered by this. And also, they're not afraid of it either.
They're also healthier people, I think.
That's correct. That is correct. If you're really, truly healthy in all levels here, truly holistically healthy, you're not going to be bothered by these things. Or if you are, it's not going to be for long. Because, again, they're scavengers. It's low-hanging fruit, as we like to say. What is opportunistic?
What is, now we know what possession is. What is obsession?
Well, that's before a possession. A possession is where you have an entity or more, many move into a human being and take over their life in different ways. Obsession is just kind of like the stalker phase, where they're just annoying the person, they're around them, they're influencing them, but they haven't actually taken up residence.
And poltergeists?
That would be a kind of psychic phenomena that your listeners would be familiar with, where there's actual activity going on in the house. Things fall, things move, things disappear. It's a harassment kind of activity.
Right, and they're not friendly.
Right, it's not. And it's linked to the emotional states. That's why we often see poltergeist phenomena with young girls. Okay? Because there's a high amount of emotional energy going on at puberty, and that psychic sexual energy is the fuel for that phenomena to take place.
Why are they always evil?
Well, I think...
Because there aren't friendly poltergeists, are there?
No.
No.
Well, I think if there were, we probably don't notice them. that's a question. We say, why do we notice evil? Because it's easier.
Good
tends to be very harmonious because that's the nature of good. It's to be harmonious, to be balanced, whereas evil is to be disruptive. So we notice that more easily. And again, it's because of the type of energy involved. You have someone or some being or something that is frustrated or angry or desirous of something that it can't have. You know, usually life in this world. We have an advantage as human beings. We have such wonderful, beautiful opportunities as just being here in this world to experience so many things. And these beings don't have that.
How many of these episodes or things are created by us as opposed to being out there in the universe in other dimensions that come at us?
I think it's kind of like the same question we had about egregores, because really it's the egregore is the same thing on a bigger scale. Okay, there's human involvement. So we have to actively engage in the process. We have to be the connection at the physical end of the pipeline. So whether it's a big psychic force or being, or whether it's a small psychic force or being, like as we said, a poltergeist, we have to be the thing that it can work in and through.
Where does exorcisms fit into this?
That's psychic hygiene. That's spiritual hygiene.
Okay.
That's where, just as we have to take a bath every day, okay, and clean and brush our teeth and all of that, we need to have a spiritual life that cleanses us as well, where we reflect upon our activities and our life and how we treat ourselves and how we treat others and how we develop healthy relationships all around. And when someone is very ill, they often can't take care of themselves, so they need someone to do that for them to help jumpstart the process. And an exorcism is a way of doing that for someone. You can at least temporarily relieve the psychic pressure and oppression that's on them, the spiritual force. In fact, I'm helping someone right now, a rabbi, work on his memoirs as an exorcist, and we're hoping to get that done within the next year or so. And it's
that would be cool. You would get him on as a guest, too.
I would hope so. Yeah,
especially
so
with some of the things they must have done.
Spiritual life is critical. That's what I want to get across to your guests. A healthy spiritual life is critical, and a healthy goals in life, a healthy life, whether to keep you free of poltergeists or to keep you free of negative egregores. Remember, not all of them are negative. Some of them can be very helpful to you, but sometimes, you know, if it pulls you away from yourself and away from your achievements and yourself, your health and well-being, then you need to separate from it.
You also wrote a book called Between the Gates, Lucid Dreaming, Astral Projection, and the Body of Light. Let's talk a little bit about that. Have you been able to astral project at will? That sounds like a no.
I can set up a situation where it will happen usually later that night. Like if I sit down in a chair and try to project, the answer is no. I'm not going to get up and walk out. But if I sit down in a chair with the desire to project, I know, I can guarantee that night it will happen when I go to sleep.
How do you use it in your day-to-day living?
It's really just a matter of relaxing and opening up to whatever insights or inspiration or wisdom, if you will, that may occur to me. I try not to actively direct it too much. I try to just relax and let my, inner self do the directing for me.
Mark, with a degree in theology, does this sometimes conflict with some of those beliefs?
Well, not really, not for me. I'm sure it does for some others. But, you know, I look at this very broadly. Every religious movement has a variety of beliefs, and you can use them or be used by them. So I don't let the limiting egregore of the institution that gave me my degree and its beliefs limit me.
Don't let its
narrow view become mine.
I mean, have these egregores ever physically attacked somebody?
So. Yes, very much so, because you'll find in just, again, let your listeners use their own experience. You go into a group or a meeting or of some kind, and you feel this sense of rejection, the need to leave, that you're not welcome there.
And maybe it's one individual that you feel.
Right, one in particular, or it can just be the whole environment as a whole.
You know something's wrong.
That's correct. Always pay attention to that. You know, when you get that feeling that something's really great, wonderful, pay attention to it. When you get that feeling that something's really wrong, pay attention to that as well. That's part of your inner self. That's that intuition, that inner guidance, telling you, you know, to how to keep you safe.
What creates that feeling, that mood, for example, in that room for the first place?
Well, say you're going into a highly charged room where there's a lot of political activity going on. Of course, those thoughts are going to be very specific to the party and the candidates and the issues. And behind that, there's going to be a lot of personal ambition as well. And if you're coming into that and not willing to, we'll just say, simply agree with everything, maybe you're going to ask questions or consider other points of view. You know, the egregore doesn't want that. You know, it's very much like, you know, when someone would go to church. You know, you some churches, they're wonderful. You feel a certain cloister in there, as though other thoughts and ideas aren't even possible.
Is that why vampires, for example, don't want to see a cross?
I think that they don't want to see anything holy, you know, and that's because holiness is ease and harmony. It's life, and it's love, and it's compassion. In a positive way. And, of course, something that's vampiric is totally selfish.
When you were studying theology, did you ever think that you would be looking at these topics today?
I did, because I grew up in an environment steeped in esotericism. So, for me, I knew that was the case. Theology was kind of an addition to that to understand, actually, more mainstream religion.
Yeah.
But at the time, I remember I did an interview with three exorcists in my senior year for a paper. And at that time, it was just something I pulled out to do something interesting. I really didn't have an interest in it. It was just, this is a good topic, we'll do this. And I still remember the conversations I had with each and every one of them to this day. That really was a big change. But I never thought that from that paper, I would be writing topics on it decades later.
And you are.
Yeah.
And you
never
are.
Know what's going to change your life. And that's why we say the importance of your thoughts, your spiritual life, the groups you're involved in, and how to maintain a healthy life and freedom. And that's really what these writings are all about for your listeners.
What have you concluded, Mark, after all these years of studying and writing? What's out there? What have you concluded about all this?
We don't know what's out there. I really don't. But we do know one thing. Each and every one of us must be responsible for ourselves, and that our awakening, our becoming as human beings, our enlightenment is an individual activity, an individual effort. I do not believe in a collective awakening or enlightenment. There's no historical reason to believe that. It doesn't mean that we can't help other beings or create an environment that they may take advantage of and help themselves with, but that each of us must do this of our own effort.
And if we can't?
I believe that each of us can. It's just a matter of to what degree and how long that will take. And that as the notion of our life should not be limited simply, you know, the time between birth and death. That this is a critical time because it gives us so many wonderful opportunities. Don't waste it. You know, don't just be distracted by things. Take advantage of the time you have here.
Why can one person be possessed and another person doesn't even phase them?
Again, there is a kind of a sense of specialness that often comes. One of the things I noticed is when I would get calls from people wanting help with this.
Yeah.
And you see this across the board. I've talked to other investigators. I've talked to exorcists about it. And it's as much and as painful as it is, because it's being in a dysfunctional relationship. It's being in a codependent relationship. There's really very little difference. Remember, as above, so below, okay? they're involved in this relationship and they feel special. The demon has a certain amount of power, just as an angel does or any other invisible being. They have a certain clear perception, mm-hmm. not necessarily great, but they have the ability to, at least for what would impress the average person, a certain amount of psychic information that they can pass on. And this person now suddenly feels special and elevated, and they're important now.
Have you ever witnessed anything dangerous happen with any of this?
Yes.
What happened? Yeah.
I think very much so. The most dangerous things that I've noticed is not so much the physical phenomena, but is the mental health breakdowns.
Of the individual, they just fall apart, don't they?
And the way it happens is just really difficult to watch, because there's something in there that is intentionally destroying the person.
Do you feel helpless watching that?
I think not so much, because there's only so much I can do, and there's only so much other people can do.
Right.
One of the problems is that when someone is possessed, they actually have to want to get unpossessed. And as I just stated, whether we want to admit to that or not, that's not always the case.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Mark, we're going to come back and take phone calls with you next on Coast to Coast AM.